Or they will say, good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today. Beautiful Daf Gemara. So today's Daf is Nun Aleph 51. We are picking up at Nun Amud Beis. 50b. Two dots. Emotzi and Peros. Lachilas Peros. This is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 13 lines up from the bottom. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol nehyeh bedvaro. So we'll say, so remember again, just to look back, I'll just read to you in the Mishnah, the case over here that the Gemara is discussing is the case of Ein Motzi'in La'achilas Peros. So we'll say, this case is the following. So again, it's a relatively straightforward case. So, well, it's not so straightforward actually. So I go ahead, I purchase a field from Reuven. I purchase fields from Reuven. Good, beautiful, I pay for it. And I work the field, I plant the field, and the field itself produces peros. Then what happens? Turns out, it wasn't Reuven's field, but rather, again, it was a field that was stolen from Shimon. Shimon comes along and takes back the field from me. After all, Shimon is the rightful owner. I say, okay. I mean, I don't say okay, but I have to give him back the field. It's his field. And what happens? And I go back to Reuven. Because after all, again, I bought the field from Reuven. I have achrayis. He has achrayis. He has responsibility. I go back. So the Mishnah teaches me that halacha lemaisa, again, let's say I go back to Reuven, and Reuven only has enough money to go ahead and pay me back for the field. But I say, Reuven, there's also the lost cost of peros, right? Remember, again, I had $2,000 of apples growing on that tree. You owe me for that as well. So Reuven is liable for that as well. But here's the chapter of Osai. Let's say it turns out that Reuven sold off the remainder of his fields. So now I have the ability to satisfy what is owed to me. I have the ability to go after lekuchos, to go after fields that were sold by Reuven after the time that he sold the stolen field to me. So the Mishnah teaches me that motzia min alekuchos, I have the ability to seize sold fields to satisfy the obligation that Reuven has for me, for the karka, for the land, but I don't have the ability to seize encumbered fields to satisfy what? The cost, ultimately, of the peros. The cost of the produce. The cost of the produce, I can only go ahead and collect from Reuven's unencumbered property. See, hear this distinction? For the cost of the field, so I have the ability to go ahead and collect from encumbered properties. See, even fields that Reuven sold off subsequently, I have the ability to extract those fields to go ahead and satisfy my debt. But for the cost of the peros, the cost of the produce, I can only collect from unencumbered property. Says the Gemara, my time, well, what's the reason for this? So we'll say, fasting, machlokes, amr ula, amr ishlakish lefi, shein ksulin. So this is very simple. Because you can only collect from encumbered properties, stuff or items that are written in a shtar, that are written in a document. Look at Rashi. Lefishin ksuvin. Haperos halal kishenichtav shtar mechiras akarka, hagzula. Adayin lohayu. Velokasu bishtar ala ploni machar karka ploni leploni. Bachrayis. Hilchach dimei akarka havu kimal vibishtar ula haqsa achriu. Saval dimei haperos havi milva alpe. So we'll say, so Ula is of the opinion that lemaisa, again, you can only collect property from, and you can only collect the value of the land from a common property, but not peros, because the value of the karka is written in a shtar. Therefore, I will say again, essentially, a shtar has a kol, a shtar has a voice that goes out about it. Subsequent purchasers know that Reuven sold other properties, and therefore, again, encumbered properties can be taken to satisfy the obligation of the stolen property. When it comes to peros, those are not recorded in a shtar. That's like a milva al peh. That's ultimately just like a transaction done verbally. That doesn't have any lien against encumbered properties. So says the Gemara, Amali Rabbi Abalu Ula, Vahamazon Isha Vabanos, the commanding Ksivi Damu. But if that's the case, what about Mazon Isha, which also refers to the obligation that a man has to go ahead and support his wife, Vahabanos, and the daughters, demanding Ksivi Damu? It is as if these obligations are written in a shtar. I'll say, why is it as if they're written in a shtar? Because there was called Tinoi Bezdin, right? They're basic established obligations by Bezdin that a person has towards his wife and towards his daughter. And yet, the halacha is v'katani in motzin. And yet, I will say, the halacha is that the wife and the daughters cannot extract from encumbered properties to satisfy these obligations, only from unencumbered properties. So Ula, if you're right, that anything that's written in the shtar, so the creditor has the ability to collect from encumbered properties, then why is it that the isha, the wife, or the daughters can't collect their mizonos from encumbered properties as well? So Amar lehasami karahachi askun. So because there it's different. This is how the rabbi set up this takana. That ksuvin hein eitzel ben chorin ve'in ksuvin hein eitzel mishubadin. To which the Gemara says, because when the rabbis set up their takana, that Aisha and Banos get mizonos, the way they set up the takana is that the wife and the daughters are only entitled to collect from unencumbered properties. That was the way the takana was set up. V'chin am Rabbi Asi, am Rabbi Yochanan, l'fi shein ksuvin, so to Rabbi Asi and Rabbi Yochanan, supporting Ula's statement that the reason you cannot collect for the value of peros from encumbered property is because those peros are not written in a shtar. Amalei Rabbi Zeila Rabbi Asi v'hamaz. So Rabbi Asi, the Gemara is repeating the same conversation. V'hamaz on Aisha v'abanos. The command ksivi dama v'katorim etzien. But yet, when it comes to the mizonos of an isha, of a wife and the daughters, that are as if they are written in a document, and yet the halacha is you can't extract it from unencumbered property. Amalei meikara hachiyaskun ksuvin ein etzel ben chorin ve'in ksuvin ein etzel ben shubadin. To which the Gemara answers, that's because that's how the rabbis instituted it. The rabbis ultimately said that you could only go ahead and collect it from unencumbered properties, not from encumbered properties. So both say, so again, remember, I just want to make sure everybody's clear on the case. I bought a field from Reuven. Wonderful, Shalom Yisrael. I planted the field, and now let's say I'm growing apples. There's $2,000 worth of apples on the field. The field itself is worth $10,000. Turns out, field wasn't Reuven's to begin with, it was stolen from Shimon. Shimon shows up, says, Silber, you're on my field. I say, I'm sorry. I give him back the field. I go back to Reuven. I say, Reuven, you owe me $12,000. $10,000 for the value of the field, $2,000 for the produce. The Mishnah teaches me. So now let's say again, morning, Mr. Schoenfeld. Let's say again, Reuven has no property. Let's say, for argument's sake, he sold off all of his other properties after he sold me my property. So what's the halacha? So the Mishnah tells me, to pay for the value of the land, I could collect from encumbered properties. When they say encumbered properties, we mean other properties that were owned by Reuven that he sold up, subsequent to the date he sold me my property. So I could collect from encumbered properties for the value of the actual field, the $10,000, but I cannot collect from encumbered property for the value of the produce, for the value of the fruit. And Ula is saying the reason for that is the value of the property is recorded in a document, therefore it has a call. People know about it. Subsequent purchasers know about it, because you have to understand, you know, essentially what Ula is saying is, anytime you go out and you buy property, you know, I guess this is why we do like a title search, right? So anytime you go ahead and you buy property, so you know that the person you're buying the property from may have other outstanding obligations that could, under certain circumstances, lead to the seizure of your property. So technically, a person knows that. But you can only know that about things that are recorded in documents, not things that are unrecorded. Therefore, the lien against encumbered property can only be from the land, but not from the produce. Rabbi Chanina, on the other hand, says, no, l'fi she'in ksuvin. Rabbi Chanina says there's a different issue. The issue over here is that the amount of peros is not ksuvin. It's not set. In other words, Rabbi Chanina says, you can't collect from encumbered properties based on some amorphous unknown amount. That you can't do. So the value of the land is known, therefore you could have a lien against the encumbered property. But the value of the peros is not known, therefore you cannot have a lien against the encumbered property. Say by Lu, Rabbi Chanina. So the Gemara asks, Kashkan Rabbi Chanina, Ksuvin, Ksuvin Bayi, O Tap of Nun Aleph, O Dilma, Ksuvin, Va'afa Pisha, and Ksuvin. So both say, so the Shail is not Rabbi Chanina. So essentially, in order to collect from encumbered property, you need the value of the item to be set, to be known. So does it have to be known and written in a document? Or is it just enough to know that what? Even if it's not actively recorded? Tashma de Itmar, Misha Mesvein Yashte Banos Uben. So if somebody died, this is a very interesting case. If someone died and left behind two daughters and a son, The kidna harishon of anitla isra nechasim. So, also listen to this. There is a takana. If you look at Rashi, anitla isra nechasim shezem mishpat habalos pishas bagrus only su anitla isra nechasim bachnosas parnosas nidunaisam. So, also listen to this. The halacha is the following: if a man dies, not only is his estate obligated to support the daughters, and by the way, even if the estate is inherited by sons, that estate still has to support daughters. But what? Each daughter is entitled to take a tenth of the estate as her nedunya, as her dowry. So listen to this case. Two daughters and one son. Father died. First daughter went ahead and proactively seized property, one-tenth of the property, for her nedunya. And what happened? The second daughter didn't have a chance to seize her tenth before what? Before her brother died. Now here's the chap. Remember, when the brother's alive, so who's the inheritor of the estate? The brother. Now what's happened is that the brother died, which only leaves the two girls, and therefore the maisa, what's going to happen is they are going to split the inheritance. So daughter A already seized her one-tenth before her brother died. Brother died, so now what happens? We'll say, what's the halacha? Brother died, so Amar Rabbi Yochanan, shnia vitra. So ultimately, again, literally, the second one is mevatra. The second one yields her tenth. And I will say, now what does that mean? Chazal instituted the tenth in what kind of situation? Where there was a son who essentially was the owner, the inheritor of the estate. You want to give the girl something. In this situation, the girl got much more, right? Daughter number two is a 50% partner in the estate. Now, the truth is, in this case, daughter number one made out a little bit better. Why? Because she's walking away with an extra tenth. Remember, so that tenth is taken off. That tenth is now out of the pot. Now brother dies, the two daughters split the remainder of the estate 50-50. So Rabbi Yochanan says again, the second one, he used lashon of that she's mevater. Oh, so that's a very generous lashon that she's mevater. She yields. I'm mevater. Whether she's mevater or not, it doesn't matter. The halacha tells her you're mevater, right? Meaning again, you don't get that ex. You know, so we'll say, because if you're the second daughter, what do you want to say? What do you want to say? You want to say that you want to say that. Look, give me my tenth, and then we'll split the estate. Rabbi Yochanan says she's mevateris. In other words, she yields. She yields. She's willing to yield her portion. Rabbi Chanina says we could save even more than this. So we'll say, remember again, what did we say? Motzil leparnasa means, I'll say the following. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says, Gedolu mizu amru, shafilu machara achas anachasim. We could even say even more. Let's say again, before the brother died, he sold off the property. It's his prerogative, he's the inheritor. He sold off the property. What's the halacha motzin? Rashi says, motzin miyad alakuchos, ha'isr leparnasa, va'afa pisha in motzil mizuos mishal. So listen to this. You are permitted to go ahead and seize the dowry amount from sold properties. In other words, let's say father dies, same case, father dies, leaves behind three children. Brother, two daughters. Let's say daughter number one took her tenth, fine. Brother then sells off the estate. That's his prerogative. The halacha is that sister number two is able to take her tenth even from sold property. Motzi'in leparnasa, we'll say parnasa means the dowry amount, ve'in motzi lemezonos. But interestingly enough, you cannot collect from encumbered property for mezonos, which is quite fascinating. Va'at amrit shnia vitra. So one second, why would you say, what the Gemara is saying over here is, I don't understand. Why are you telling me that in the case where the brother died, sister number two is mevater, she yields her tenth. Why would she yield her tenth? In a case also where the brother sold off all of the property, she has the power to what? To take her tenth from sold property. So if she has the power to take her tenth from sold property, then what? Then what? She should take it now, before you split the inheritance. Let her take her tenth off the top, and then split the remainder. So the Gemara says, V'ha parnasa demekitz kayitz, Michtav lok siva. Now we'll say parnasa. Now remember why we're bringing this up. Also, we have one simple question. Our simple question is, according to Rabbi Chanina says that in order for you to collect from encumbered properties, it has to be what? It has to be a set amount. We were asking, does it have to be set and written? Or is it just enough if it's set, even if it's not written? So what do we just say? You could go ahead and extract from encumbered properties for the dowry, the one-tenth amount. Now we'll say the dowry amount is mekitz kayitz. It is a set amount. Michtav lo ksiva. But interesting enough, it's not what Rabbi say. It's not written anywhere. And yet, what do we see? The kamotzia. And yet, you're able to extract it from sold properties. What do you see from here? That at least according to Rabbi Hanina, the halacha is you could extract a set amount of an item from encumbered properties, even if it's not recorded in a document. To which the Gemara says, no, shiny parnasa, kevan de'is, they call the command ksiva dummy. Truly, the Rabbi said, this is not a good example, says the Gemara. Why? Because everyone knows that if I have a daughter, if I have daughters, then what? Then the mice, again, they're going to be entitled to a tenth of my estate for their dowry. So because this is a known obligation, therefore what? It's as if that not only is it kayet, not only is it set and established and defined, but what? It's as if it's written as well. And therefore, that's why you could extract, that's why the daughter has the ability to extract that amount from, to extract that amount from the lekuchos, from the purchasers. Massive Rav Huna bar Manoach. So we'll say, Rav Huna bar Manoach now raised the cash on Ula. So we'll say, now we've effectively dealt with Rabbi Hanina. Right? So now, Rabbi Hanina's shita is for peros. For produce, you can't go ahead and extract from encumbered properties. Why? Because peros is not a set defined amount. Ula was the one who said, you can't extract for peros from encumbered properties. Why? Because the mice, again, they're not written in a document. So now, Master Rav Huna bar Manoach, Rav Huna bar Manoach is asking on Ula. Mesu, benosehen, mesu, excuse me, I should say mesu. Mesu, if they died, benosehen, nizonos, minichasim, minicharnabos. So now, what's the case over here? Take a look at Rashi. Mesu b'nosei nizonos. Listen to this case. Look at Rashi. Hanosei es ha'isha. If a man marries a woman, upaska imo, lazun es bita chamesh shanos. Well, so the case over here is, a man's marrying a woman. She has a daughter from a previous marriage. Bless you. So when they get married, so the husband stipulates with his wife, I will support your daughter for 5 years. Okay. Then what happens? V'gir shebesol chamesh shanim. They get divorced within the 5 years. V'niseis la'acher. And the woman marries another man, upaska imo kimokein. And what happens? And the wife reaches the same type of agreement with husband number two, namely to support my daughter for 5 years. So what does the Gemara say? So the Gemara says, ukimoke chayv lezona chamesh shanim. Echad zonav echad nosen adme mizono. So what's it? So the case over here is that you could have a situation where she's receiving two simultaneous supports. Because remember, again, husband number one is still obligated to go ahead and honor that commitment, even if what? Even in the event of divorce. Again, the Gemara gives the circumstance when he has to do that. And husband number two, who's married to her now, also has to do that. So the Gemara just says one of them gives her money, and one of them gives her actual mizonos. Fine. But what mesu, b'noseha nizonos b'nechasim b'nechorin, kediktani mas nisin, now this is a wild case. Listen to this. Let's say those two men die. We'll call them ex-husband number one and husband number two. They both die. So we'll say, so what's the halacha? Their own biological daughters are sustained from the chasim and echorin, only from the unencumbered properties of their father. But the stepdaughter, meaning the daughter of the woman who they married, could extract her parnasa, her obligation, even from what? Even from the chasim mishubadim, even from encumbered sold property. It's an amazing case. So, if the guys die, when I say guys, husband number one, husband number two, their daughters are sustained from unencumbered property. But she being Rabbi Osei, the daughter of the wife, who is the stepdaughter to both men, she could collect her remainder of the 5 years of support from what? From the chasim mishubadim. Why? Because she is a creditor. She's a creditor, and creditors can extract their debt even from sole properties. To which the Gemara says, "Hacham I asking on." So we'll say, so now over here, what do you see? You see over here that this is a case of where she's permitted to extract her debt from the chasim mishubadim, even though what Rabbi Osei, even though her debt is not recorded. So remember, this blows Ula out of the water. I mean, in a nice way. But you understand, right? The idea of it is, Ula says, you can only extract from the chasim mishubadim when they're recorded in the shtar. Here, this girl is permitted to collect for her remainder of the 5 years worth of support from husband one, husband two, even though she doesn't have any obligation written in the shtar. To which you want to talk, I'm asking, what's the case over here? Bishak Hanu Miyado. Oh, the case of Rabosa is where the husbands did a kinyan. Karmiyadam means they did a kinyan. And also Rashi points out that kinyonim, whenever you do a kinyan is what's called omiliksiva. A kinyan is ready to be written down, ready to be recorded, and in certain respects, a kinyan is considered as if it is recorded in document form. So because of that, it's as if it's written. Ihachi banos nami. If that's the case, then why shouldn't his daughters be entitled to take their support from the Chasim Mishubadim as well? The case is where he made a kinyan, he was Makabal kinyan for his stepdaughter, but not for his actual daughter. So the Gemara says, my Pascha. What kind of answer is that? The Gemara says, essentially, my Pascha is, now you're just being random. Right? In other words, now you're just making stuff up in order to go ahead and answer the question. Bas Ishto. The Gemara says, no, I'll tell you why we're not making stuff up. Because, Bas Ishto, Dahavi Bishas Kinyan, Mahani Le Kinyan. Bito, Dahlo Havi Bishas Kinyan, Lo Mahani Le Kinyan. So we'll say, remember again, the difference between the husband's biological daughters and what? And the wife's daughters. We'll say, presumably, when are these Kinyanim being made? At the time when he gets married. So remember, her daughter from the previous marriage is in existence at the time they get married, but what? The daughters they're going to have together are not yet in existence. Therefore, Lemaisa, again, what the Gemara is suggesting is, Kabbalah's kinyan works for the stepdaughter, because Lemaisa, again, she's alive. But for the daughters, we'll say, remember, the daughters that we're referring to are the daughters that the man has with this woman who he's marrying. Those daughters are not yet alive. Therefore, Kabbalah's kinyan for their future obligations does not create a binding situation, to which the Gemara says, Milo askinon, dahavi tarvai b'shaskinyan. But why can't you set up the case as where both the biological and stepdaughters are alive at the time of the kinyan? Vehechi dami, what's the case? Digarsha v'ahadra. Well, so this case can be very simple. Man is married to a woman, right? Man is married to a woman. Let's say again, she has a daughter from another marriage. So she was married, just follow this case for just a moment. She was married, she had a daughter. She gets divorced from husband number one. She marries husband number two. They have a daughter together, and then they get divorced. Then husband number two remarries her. That's permitted, as long as she didn't marry anyone else in the interim. Husband number two remarries her. At the time that he remarries her, both the stepdaughter, the daughter she has from her first marriage, as well as the daughter they had together from their first marriage together, are both in existence. And just say that the husband is a Kabbalah Kinyan. Remember, Kabbalah's Kinyan means, let's say he makes a Kinyan. He picks up a handkerchief, right, and does a Kinyan, and he acquires upon himself the obligation to support both of these girls. That's a case ultimately where it's as if the obligation is written in a shtar. If it's as if it's written in a shtar, then what? Then if he subsequently dies or something else happens to him and they need to get their support and there's no property in the estate, what can they do? They can seize it ultimately again from the Chasim Mishubadim. To which the Gemara says, no. Rather, here's the difference. Ela bito dibitnai bezin ka'achala lo mahani lekinyin. Rather, the Gemara says the distinction is like this. His daughter, one's own biological daughter, who is supported by her father by virtue of a Tanai Bezdin, of a Bezdin legislation. So for her, Kabbalah's Kinyan doesn't work. If her father makes a Kinyan, it's Makabal Kinyan, to support her, that Kinyan does not make it as if the obligation is written in a shtar, since the obligation itself already exists. Bas ishto delab b'tanai Bezdin ka'achla, mahani le Kinyan. But I will say, on the other hand, supporting your stepdaughter, which Rabbi say is not an obligation, supporting the daughter of your wife, which is not an obligation of the man, he ultimately is committing himself to that. When he goes ahead and he does a kinyan, Lamais again, it makes it as if the obligation is written down, which Rabbi says, really? Does that make sense to say that because supporting one's daughter is a tanai of Bezdin, it actually makes that obligation weaker than an obligation that you take on of your own volition. Elabito kevan dipnai Bezdin ka'achla emot sorry atvisa. Rather, the Gemara says, here's the difference. I will say, for one's own daughter, the reason you can't collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, if the father dies, right? And now, let's remember, the girl, his biological daughter, is entitled to support from the estate. The reason why you can't go ahead, why she can't collect from encumbered property, is why Rabbi Osai, because Rechoshesh, that maybe he gave her bundles of money during his lifetime. In other words, Rabbi Osai, a father has a particular affinity for his biological daughter, and therefore the Maisa, maybe again, for his own daughter, he prepaid certain things. He gave her money during his lifetime that she should have after his death. The Gemara doesn't feel that same issue would apply for a stepdaughter. And therefore, the Maisa, again, the stepdaughter could collect from the Chasim Mishubadim because we're pretty positive that she never received any prepayment on her obligations versus a biological daughter where we feel there's a strong possibility that the father had given her stuff over the course of the lifetime to support her and to secure even in the event of his death. So Tashma, I'm Rabbi Nassan, Imasai, Bizman Shemek, Shabosai Sinau. Rabbi Nassan is going back for a second and saying the following. The Mishnah said, remember that what? That Alocha Lamaisa, you could collect from the Chasim Mishubadim for the value of the seized property. This is talking about the case of the stolen land. So you could take from the Chasim Mishubadim for the value of the stolen property, but not for the value of the Peros. So says the Gemara, Rabbi Nassan qualifies this ruling and says, when is that so? Bizman Shekide Mikcho Shalsheni, Lishvacho Shalrishon, only when the second sale of property took place before the first guy improved his property. So we'll say, remember again, in this case over here, I'm buying a field from Reuven, and Shimon also bought a field from Reuven. Then it turns out that what? I improved my field. Then it turns out that my field was stolen. Right? Reuven stole me stolen property. Levi is the real owner of the field, and Levi takes back his field. I go back to Reuven and I say, Reuven, here's the deal. I want repayment for the $10,000 for the money of the field and $2,000 of produce. Reuven says, I would love to help you out, but I've got no property. Why don't you go to Shimon? I sold him my property. So remember, what did the Mishnah teach me? I could extract from Shimon for the value of the field, but not for the value of the produce. Comes along with Rabbi Nassan and says, let's qualify that ruling. What's the ruling? That's only true when the sale of the field to Shimon preceded the improvements I made to my field. Aval, kadam shivcho sharishon lemekcho sharsheni, govem enuchasim mishibadim. But Rabbosai, halacha lemaisa, the Gemara says, or I should say, not halacha lemaisa, but what Rabbi Nassan is suggesting is that if I improved my field before Reuven sold the field ultimately again to Shimon, then not only could I extract the field from Shimon to go ahead and pay for the actual value of the field, but I could also go ahead and extract sold property to pay for improvements to the field. Alma. Oh, this is a different opinion. Menachem's saying good. This is a third opinion now. Third opinion. Jump on me like that. So says the Gemara, I'm a Mishum de lo kadim. So we'll say, so what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, it's an issue of precedent. So Menachem's saying good. We'll say, this is a third opinion. So now what we're saying is, Ula's saying, the reason you can't collect for Peros from encumbered property is because Peros is not written. Rabbi Hanina says you can't collect for Peros from encumbered property because it's not Ketsuvin. It's not established. And now, what Rabbi... Who was this? What Rabbi Nassan is saying is, the reason you can't collect is because the second guy's ownership of his property precedes my improvements of the stolen land. Which, by the way, means that if my improvements of the stolen land preceded the sale of the field from Reuven to Shimon, then what? Then I can take the field from Shimon, not only to pay for the land, but also to pay for the produce. So the Gemara says, Tanoi, in reality, this whole thing is a machlokes Tanoi. This Sanya, because we learned, in Motzi Lachi, let's pray, Shavach, Karkos, Lamazan, Isha, Va'abonos, Minachasim, Mishubadim. So we'll say, so we learned that Halokha Lamais, again, you cannot go ahead and extract from encumbered property for Peros, for land improvement, for mizonos, for a woman and for her daughters. None of these things can be taken from the chasim mishubadim. Why? Mipnei tikun ha'olam, for the benefit of society. What does that mean? Lefi she'en ksuvin, because, again, the first opinion says, because these amounts are not written in the shtar. So because they're not written, because they're not defined in the shtar, therefore you can't collect from a common property. Or Rabbi Yossi, v'chi ma tikun ha'olam yesh bezu, v'halo ein ksuvin. Rabbi Yossi says, no, the issue is not that they're not written, but rather, again, the issue ultimately, again, is that they are not ultimately valid. Value of it is not established. So bottom line, everyone is agreeing. This is one of those interesting discussions in halacha. Everyone agrees on the bottom line. The bottom line is that for all of these items mentioned, you cannot collect from the chasim mishubadim. As you notice, by the way, we reject the opinion of Rabbi Nassan, meaning we don't look at, you know, did I improve my lands first, or did Shimon go ahead and buy the property first? We dismiss that opinion. Bottom line is that halacha lemaisa, you could, if it turns out that I bought stolen property from Reuven, I can go back to Reuven and I can extract from subsequent fields that were sold to satisfy the value ultimately again of the field, but I cannot extract for nechasim mishubadim for the value of peros. But also, I want to be clear, just because I can't extract encumbered property for the value of the peros doesn't mean that Reuven is not obligated in that towards me. So for example, I bought a field for $10,000 and there's $2,000 in produce. All the Mishnah is telling me is I can't seize $2,000 worth of encumbered property to pay for the produce. But Reuven still owes me $2,000. So he's still on the hook. It's a chov. It's a debt that he owes me. I'm just limited in terms of my recourse for collection. So Mark goes by to him. This is an amazing sugya. So what happens? If you find the lost object, you cannot be made to swear. And the Mishnah again said, "Nipnei tikron," which we'll say again, even before we get into the details, it makes a lot of sense why. Because we'll say, if I find something and I want to return it, I'm trying to be a good Samaritan. If by going ahead and returning something, I might be forced to take a shavua about what I found, what I didn't, then what? What's going to happen? People will simply turn a blind eye. So what's that? So it says in my Rabbi, let's see, I'm going to be Yitzchak. This is an interesting case. Shnei kisin kshurin matzasi li. So let's listen to this. So what happens? So vahalo amar lo matzasi el echad. So Reuven says to me, you found my two money bags that were tied together, and I say to Reuven, I didn't find two money bags, I only found one. So what's the halacha? Nishba. I have to swear regarding the existence of the other money bag. Okay, shnei shvarim kshurim matzasili. So Reuven says to me, you found my two oxen tied together. V'hala amar lo haya ela echad. And I say what? I say, no, I only found one ox. So what's that locha? Ein onishba. I don't have to swear on the other ox. The Gemara says, my taima shvarim menaschi mehadadi kisen lo menaschi mehadadi. So what's there supposed to say? Because oxen, you could understand, they break apart from each other. Even though they might be tethered, it's because they're constantly moving, they can break apart from each other. Money bags do not go ahead and separate from each other. Therefore, we'll say the assumption over here is, essentially what Rabbi Yitzchak is talking about, we'll say, is a case of mode b'miktzas. So mode b'miktzas means that if somebody claims X, and I go ahead and admit to part of that claim, I have to swear on the remainder of the claim. So Reuven's saying, you found two money bags. I'm saying, I only found one. Once I admit the existence of one money bag, then I might have to swear on the other. Oxen is different, because oxen is quite possible. We believe the fact that I only found one. Why? Because oxen move. So possibly they separate from each other. Shnei shvarim kshur matzasa. Reuven says to me, you'd found two oxen, v'halo omer matzasi v'echzarti l'cha, echad mehem, and I claim, I found, and I gave one back to you, harizeh nishba. So ultimately, again, the halach is, I have to take an oath, modim ikzas, v'reb yitzchak, so we'll say, remember, in this case, I'm admitting I found two, right? Reuven's saying, there were two, I admit I found two, but what? I returned one. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, v'reb yitzchak, So the Gemara asks, I don't understand, what did the Mishnah say? The Mishnah said that whenever we're dealing with found property, right? Whenever we're dealing with what we call a shava saveda, it's a lost object, then what? You're exempt from shavuos. So these are all cases of where I'm returning lost property, and yet the halacha is in certain cases that what? I have to take a shavua. So what does Rabbi Yitzchak do with the din of the Mishnah? To which the Gemara says, Amud Beis, who Amar Karabi Eli Ezer ben Yaakov. Oh, he has a Kabbalah Ezer ben Yaakov. Ezer ben Yaakov, see what I say? What does he say? Disanyo, Rabbi Ezer ben Yaakov Omer, Pa'amim Sha'adam Nishba Al-Tanas Atzmo. There are times where a person could be forced to take a Shavua based on his own admission. What's the case? Case, so it's a fascinating case. Mona La'avicha B'yadi Ve'achaltiv Pras Harezen Nishba. So listen to this. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, following case. I say to Reuven, your father lent, it could either be lent me or lent my father. Either way, $1,000. But I just want to let you know, I paid him back $500. So he lent me or lent my father $1,000. I paid him back $500. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Harezen nishba. I have to take an oath on the remaining $500. Okay. I have to take an oath on the remaining $500. And we'll say, that's a case where I am generating the obligation for Shavua. Why is that called I'm generating the obligation for Shavua? Because the Maisa, again, I remember, I will say, nobody, I'm saying this to Reuven. What did Reuven know about this $1,000 before I opened my mouth?
Nothing.
So here, I'm admitting I owe it, I'm admitting I paid back half of it, and because of my admission, I have created the obligation of Shavua for myself. Chum say, no. There's no Shavua here. Why? Eino ela kimeshiv aveda upater. So listen, the Chachamim say that this is like returning a lost object. We'll say, why is it called like returning a lost object? Because remember, Reuven had what? No idea about the existence of this money. I'm choosing to divulge, I could have kept my mouth shut. I'm choosing to divulge that information. it's as if I am returning a lost object, and therefore what? And therefore, again, lemaisa, there is no obligation of shua for the rest. So both say. So the Gemara is suggesting over here, just to tie this together, the Gemara is suggesting that Rabbi Yitzchak holds like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, excuse me, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, because Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that even in a case where I am going ahead and divulging the information, I can still be chayiv in a shvua. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, lest le meishav avei de pater. Both said, does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov not hold of this concept that meishav avei de? Both said, meishav avei de is another term for when I am for when I am the one who is bringing the claim to the forefront. In other words, no one is claiming the money from me. I am the one who is admitting the debt. Rabbi Eliezer, so the Chachamim say in that case, it's like you're returning a lost object, and therefore you're pater from shua. Does Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov not accept that premise? Amarav, what's the case? Bitoano katam. The case of Yerabosai is not where I'm just admitting to the debt, but rather it sounds like there's a katam, there's a minor who is saying, so let's say Reuven's a minor and he says, my father lent you money. So here's the Gemara says, katan. Right, Reuven's a minor and he's claiming that I owe his father money, or I owed his father money. Midei mishashes bei. Both sides, does the taino, does the statement of a katan have any type of relevance? So how we learned, Ein nishba'in al tainas cheres shalto v'katan. We learned that's what Rabbi say, that you cannot, the taino, the claim of a cheres, deaf mute, shalto, someone deranged, or a katan, or a minor, cannot generate an obligation for a shvua. I says the Gemara, my katan, what is a katan? Gadol. This is amazing. Now, katan doesn't mean katan. Katan means a gadol. So the Gemara says, "Va'amai karele katan." So okay, you'll excuse me for asking, but if he's a gadol, then why are you calling him a katan? So Bosai is actually a very interesting answer. To the gabe mili da'aviv katan. Bosai, actually, the Gemara talks about this in many different places. The idea is that what it means is, in regards to the affairs of his father's estate, he's like a child. Meaning, just like a child is considered to lack knowledge in the general financial affairs of his parents' estate, so too this man may be a biological adult, but lemaisa regarding his father's estate, he's a katan. Ihachi, tainas atzma. If that's the case, then why are you calling this a case of where a person is paying the money based on his own admission? Tainas achirimu. We'll say this is a case of where a person is paying money. Why? Because some, meaning, remember, now what you're just saying is Reuven is saying, hey, you owe my father, you borrowed $1,000 from my father. To which the Gemara says, Tainas achin veldas atzmo. What's the case? The case of Yerbosa is where the claim is coming from someone else, but I am admitting that I owe it and that I've paid half. To which the Gemara says, but that's always what happens. Kulu ta'anosa nami tainas achin veldas atzmo ninu. Yerbosa, that is the general case of the way that monetary claims work. Someone makes a claim against me, and I admit that I owe the claim. To which the Gemara says, Ela bidirabakamathigi. Rather, Rabbosu, what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. The machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is in fact a machlokas in the Shita of Rabbah. Rabbosu, get ready for this. This is such a yisod. This is the Gemara. This Gemara is actually fun. This actually is enjoyable. This you're going to see is mamish like recreational Talmud Torah. Listen to this. The Amar Rabba mipnei ma'amra Torah mode b'mikses atani. Shabbos, it's such a solistic idea. Why is it that mode b'mikses? Shabbos, remember, what's mode b'mikses? Reuven says, I owe him $1,000. I say, I only owe you 500. What's the halacha? I have to take a shvua on the remaining 500. So says Rabba, why do we say that mo de b'mikzas, you have to take a shvua? Chazaka in adam meyes panav bifnei balchovo. But so listen to this. Because there's a chazaka. Chazaka means there's a presumption that if I borrowed money from someone, then what? I can't lie to their face and say that I don't owe you any money. The truth is, I will say, what I really would like to do is, I'd like to deny the full $1,000. But again, I don't have the chutzpah to deny the full 500, so what do I do? Excuse me, I don't have the chutzpah to deny the full 1,000, so what do I do? I only deny half of it. Now, Rabbi said, now why am I denying? In reality, listen, it's like we're talking about two sides of our mouth. I really want to admit to the whole amount. In other words, I want to pay my money. So why don't I want to admit to the debt? V'haydilo odile ishtamuti hu kedim ishtamitle. I'm trying to buy myself time. V'savar ada havole zuzi uparanalis. We'll say, the Gemara is telling us sometimes the psychology of the lender. So Reuven says, I owe him $1,000. So what do I really want to do? Let's work backwards. What I really want to do, right? What I really want to do is, right, I really want to deny the whole thing. Now, I don't want to deny the whole thing. Not because I'm trying to get out. I want to pay him. I want to pay him. I don't have the money now. But I can't deny the whole thing. Why? Chutzpah. Because we'll say, you know, even liars, right? Even liars kind of say, I'm not that kind of liar, right? I mean, even liars have their limit. So I can't deny the whole claim. So how do I buy myself some time? By partial admission of the claim. And therefore, v'amar achmana, rami shvua iluya, kihechi delu debikule. Therefore, the Torah understood the psychology of the debtor and said, you know what, he's admitting 500, but let's make him take a shvua to ascertain the fact that he really does owe the other 500 as well. So we'll say, so listen to this. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Savar, lo shnabo, v'lo shnabibno, eino meiz, v'hilchach lav meshiv avedu. So we'll say, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov says, this psychology applies to who? Applies to whether you're talking to the creditor himself or who? Or the son of the creditor. Either way, Rabosai, again, a person won't lie to the creditor and won't lie to the son of the creditor as well. Therefore, again, if I go ahead and Reuven, let's say the son of the creditor says, you borrowed $1,000 from my father, and I say, I only borrowed 500, that's a case of modib mixas, and I have to swear to the son of the creditor. Well, so listen to this. For Rabbanan Sarri, the rabbis say no. Rabbi, sorry. Who, bo, who de eno meis, aval bibno meis. Well, so listen to this. People say the psychology only applies to the creditor himself. When I borrow money from Reuven, so what? I will never lie totally to Reuven's face and deny the whole claim. So if I do a partial admission of $500, that's modiv mixas, and the halacha triggers the shavua for the remaining 500. I will say, you know who I will lie to? I will lie to the son of the creditor, right? I didn't borrow the money from him. I borrowed the money for the father. And therefore, again, I have absolutely no problem, quote unquote, lying to him. And therefore, I will say, whatever I admit to the son of the creditor has the din of what? Has the din of Meshav Aveda. I will say, why is that called Meshav Aveda, returning a lost object? Because Lamaisa, I had the ability, if I wanted to fully lie and free myself from any liability. Therefore, whatever amount I do admit to has the status of what? Returning of a lost object, and therefore, no shavua. So therefore, Allah Chalabayis, what comes out from this sugi is the following. First of all, the way we paskin is that when you return a lost object, just start returning a lost object, even if the owner of the object says, hey, you return my wallet with $1,000, there was $1,500 in that, I have the right to say, listen, just doing my job of Hashavas Aveda, and the halacha does not impose the shvua upon me for the remainder of the money. That is halacha l'maisa. Fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. Now, again, everybody agrees in a regular case of modiv mixas. I borrowed money from Reuven. Reuven says, you borrowed 1,000. I say, only borrowed 500. Boom, triggers shvua modiv mixas, partial admission oath, has to take a shvua on the remaining 500. What about, again, if this conversation is not with the creditor, but with the son of the creditor? That's the machlokes, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says partial admission to the son of the creditor is no different than partial admission to the creditor himself, and therefore the shvua modiv mixas. Chacham say no. When you get to the son of the creditor, anything you admit is like meshiv aveid, it's like turning a lost object. Therefore, we believe your admission, and there is no shavua triggered for the remainder. So we'll stop our pick with the Mishnah Mirtz Hashem tomorrow.